little bit about my relapse history, and so you know that I actually am qualified to lead this kind of workshop. You know, they say that no matter how far down the scale we've gone, we'll see how our experience can benefit others. So this might be an example of how, having had many relapses and learned a lot along the way, I wish I could have learned it without the relapses, but apparently that was not what my higher power had in store for me. So I came into the See How program, I think it was about 2003, and I'd been in the sister or the mother program of 12-step food programs before that, and not having much success, as a lot of you have experienced there. Very minimal abstinence. There wasn't even an emphasis on it in the meetings that I went to. So I came here, and between 2003 and 2012, which is 9 years, I had some periods of abstinence, and one was even like a year and 8 months. And for the life of me, when I think back, I'm not sure why I threw it away, but that's part of what we're going to cover today. It wasn't as much of a mystery as I think. There were actually warning signs along the way that I either didn't see or I saw and ignored. So that's hopefully what we'll learn not to do today. So in 2012, I came back to my home meeting in Carson, California, and I had, yay for Carson. It's on Zoom now, and we have our own Zoom number. Anyone who wants to join that meeting, I'd be happy to share the information. So I came back, and it was July 5th, and on July 4th, because it was Independence Day, I thought, I want independence from this obsession. And so there was something about the significance of that day, and I have to say that the relapse that I was in at the time was not the worst one physically that I'd ever had. In other words, I didn't weigh more than I ever had. I hadn't gained more. I wasn't even eating necessarily more. But I was so spiritually and emotionally bankrupt that it was hell. And so I have to say, my sponsor who's in this room, I asked her to be my sponsor. She said yes. I tell you that as I was walking up to the front of the room to ask her, my head is going, no, don't ask her. You don't want to do that. You don't want to be accountable. Yeah, you're going to have to actually turn your food over to someone. You'll fail. Brain was just like gone over time. So my legs did for me what my brain was trying to prevent me, and this is higher power, walked my legs up to her. And as I'm literally walking, and it felt like a very long distance, but it was about from here to the end of this room, I'm thinking to myself, she'll say no. She said yes. So now, damn, I was like in it. And it was wonderful because she's been my sponsor ever since, and I've been abstinent since then. So that's been 10 amazing years and 2 weeks. And I'm so grateful for that. I have to say that, believe me, I didn't do it. Oh, gosh, but thank you. I think this is the first abstinence I've ever had that I've been really clear that I didn't do it and I couldn't do it. I believe there's another relapse in me. I think there's always another relapse. There's always a deeper bottom. But I'm not so sure, both at my age and just in general with my relapse history, that I have another recovery in me. So for today, I'm willing to not test it. I'm willing to go do what I need to do to be able to go to bed tonight with my head on the pillow, abstinent. I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. First of all, hopefully I'll wake up tomorrow. But I don't know if I'll be willing tomorrow. But the great thing is God doesn't ask us to do tomorrow today. So all I need to do is the actions today. So I've talked a little bit about my relapse history. I think there was a point at which, in one of my many relapses, I had so much shame around it that I didn't really take any time to analyze what went wrong. In fact, in the beginning, I really thought I was doing fine. I was just trucking along, abstinent, working the program, so I thought. And then all of a sudden, my face is in the food. No, it doesn't work like that. The food, as we've heard, is often the last thing to go. So there were a series of progressive deteriorations that occurred on a spiritual, emotional, and mental level along the way before I picked up that food. And I didn't recognize them. And so today, a big goal of mine is to identify what that process before we pick up the food is so you can see it coming and prevent yourself from ending up in a relapse, okay? So that's really my goal. And my recovery program, I'm not doing anything mysterious. It's all what's written. It's the first time that I haven't defied all of the, you know, I'm not going to do this tool. I'll, you know, pick one and not do the other. I see where that got me. So as I've heard some people say, you never know if it's the tool that you left out, which is the one that's going to keep you abstinent that day. So I'm not going to take any chances. I want to use them all. And it's like all the arsenal that I have at my disposal. So I work the program as it's written to the best of my ability. I'm certainly not perfect. But I think that some things that are fundamentally different for me this time around, and that, you know, obviously it's God's grace that I'm abstinent and abstinent this long. But I also think I got much more serious about taking the first three steps every day. I think I turned my food over in the past, but nothing else. So I was still trying to control people, places, and situations. I can't say I'm perfect in that area now either. But I got that it wasn't just about the food. I really understood that. So in addition, I started making regular outreach calls, and that was never something that I did before. And it was miraculous. I mean, it was just unbelievable how much easier my program became when I stopped defying it. And I actually started making the outreach calls, and I started getting to know people's story. They got to know mine. So that, let's say I'm having a really hard time one day, I can call someone up and say, "Hi, it's Mindy, can we talk?" And I don't have any hesitation that I can say that without the niceties first, because we've built that relationship. By the way, you can say it to anyone in the program, whether you've built the relationship or not, but I personally wouldn't have felt that comfortable doing it. So, you know, it's making those outreach calls, and I've done a lot more service than I did before. And we know that that's like should be the first, but it's often the last line of defense. When all else fails, service will keep us abstinent. So I highly recommend it. All right, that's enough about my story and what I do to work. Actually, there is one more thing I want to say about my recovery program. I treat my abstinence like a precious child that I need to protect. I heard somebody describe it that way in a meeting once, and I thought, oh, that's it, that's it. So I'm not going to leave my child out on the street to fend for herself, you know, with all the cars, all the dangers out in the world. No, I'm going to protect her, and that's what I need to do with my abstinence. And I'd say a key shift that I made from being in relapse back and forth to this recovery is I started organizing my life around my program instead of organizing my program around my life. Because when you organize your program around your life, something is always more important than program. And it's a slow, sometimes we don't even notice imperceptible changes. Oh, I made two outreach calls. I said, well, that's enough. You know? Oh, I got three answering machines, so that counts. I mean, we can do those things in our head, but they can all be potential warning signs. And for me, just with my history, I'm not willing to take that risk. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to stop with my story there. And any of you that want to know anything more, you can call me for outreach, and I'd be happy to tell you. What I'd like to do now is pass out our handouts. And I have two volunteers to do that. I'll just turn this way. And we'll ask you to just take them and then pass them down your row, please. And we won't need them all, because by the way, it is wonderful to be in a room with other compulsive eaters. I just have to say that. My tribe, I'm with my tribe, you know. It doesn't matter if we're all in different places in our recovery, because the person who got up earliest today has been abstinent the longest. I've heard that. I love that. You know, you can never take anything for granted. You really can't. So today is about fortifying our program to minimize the possibility of relapse. But there's no guarantees. But we can fortify ourselves. Okay, let's start by talking about the relapse process. Because as I said, I didn't just find myself with my face in the food. What happened along the way? These are the steps that lead from recovery to relapse. They may be worded a little differently than you may have thought about them, but take a minute to just... Oh, sorry. Thank you. Thanks for the reminder. You may just take a minute to read through them and see, you know, what's here. see how each, you can see how each, is that okay? You can see how each kind of builds on the ones before it. But notice that it isn't until the eighth step here that the food comes into play, right? It doesn't say anything about even a craving before this. These are things that happen behind the scenes. And the whole goal here is intervene earlier upstream so it doesn't have to get to the point where you have a slip and a relapse. And it is, I believe it is possible. And even though self-knowledge doesn't avail us, you know, prevention from relapse, taking some time to think about your own relapse process in the past, you know, if we can let go of the shame long enough to actually learn some things from it, it can be very helpful. Okay. Now, somewhere along the process here is the loss of structure. It can happen earlier for some people, later for others, meaning some part of your program got weaker. Okay. And it sometimes happens only after you've picked up the food. Other times, it's part of the process that allows the stress to build because you're letting go of your support systems, you're letting go of the recovery actions that kept you abstinent. So essentially, by the time you get to a full-blown relapse, it's often accompanied by unmanageability in every area of our lives, our health, our relationships, our job, our work, you know, everything that can happen. And one of the things that I noticed about my relapses, and I've heard other people share this in meetings, is that even you could have the same set of problems when you're abstinent than when you're in relapse. But when you're in relapse, as they say in the big book, our problems pile up and become astonishingly difficult to solve, right? Most of us as addicts have a pretty low stress tolerance. I think it's just how we're wired. And that's okay. We have to manage to it, right? It's no use for me to pretend that I can take on the world and I'll be fine. I've had to really make some lifestyle changes that support my abstinence, but, you know, that's a whole other story. So, all righty. So the concept here is to intervene early on. All right, let's go on to the next handout, and I'm going to have you start doing some individual work in a minute. These are some of the common signs of relapse. Warning, you're not necessarily in relapse, and they're a combination of attitudes, thoughts, behaviors. So what I'd like you to do is read through page 2, relapse warning signs, and circle or underline any of these that you think apply to you, either are happening right now in your life or have happened in a prior relapse. So do that and then go on to page 3, and if there are additional relapse warning signs that you've experienced, please go ahead and list them there. And if anyone needs a pen, just raise your hand. I have a couple extra here. We'll take about 5 minutes for this. We'll be doing a pairs exercise where we'll incorporate what you've written here. So for now, let's just go on to page 4. And remember I mentioned earlier that the process that can lead to relapse includes changes in our thinking. So some of us can identify ones, like one common one for me was, I'll never overeat again. You know, as soon as I'm thinking that, that in and of itself is a relapse warning sign. So what I'd like you to do now is similar to what we just did. These are some relapse-prone thoughts that are going on in your head and some behaviors. And I'd like you, just for page 4, to do what we did earlier. Just go ahead and star or circle ones that you feel like apply to you. Take a few minutes for this. Okay. Let's turn to page 5. And the instructions for this are a little, I'm not hearing you. Page 5? Page 5 says pairs exercise on it. You don't have page 5 that says that? At the bottom?
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Let me just take a look.
There's no page numbers.
No.
There is.
Yes, yeah, they're at the bottom left. Bottom right. I should have said that.
I'm sorry.
Apologize.
It's okay. I should have said that.
My math was in the way.
Okay. So this next exercise, I did a quick head count. I may be wrong, but I think we have even numbers, which means that everybody can have a partner without having to have a group of three. But if we do end up with an extra person, you can join. So let me give you the instructions, and then you'll basically have a total of 20 minutes to do this. So there's a lot of rich activity that you can learn here. The purpose of this exercise is to kind of spontaneously say, I know my abstinence is at risk when. So in your pair, you know, just partner up with someone. Actually, you know what? Let's partner up right now, and then I'll give you the instructions. I think that'll be easier. Why don't you do that? Keep your handouts with you. Let's see. Do we have even numbers? The reason why I prefer pairs over threesome is only because if we run out of time, one of you may not have an opportunity to do the part that involves, you know, knowing, writing out what your abstinence, the risk part. So if possible, let's do pairs. I'm sorry? Okay. Are we good? Okay. All right. We're good? I'm sorry?
I said, I have a buddy now, but do I need to welcome a third person, or are we done?
I'm about to give you the instructions for the activity. Great. So let's look at page 5. Everybody will have the opportunity to do both roles. Okay. Okay. The way this is going to work is one person will be speaking verbally, and the other person will literally write down to the best, you know, the essence of what they said. It doesn't have to be verbatim. So if I'm doing this, I say, I know my abstinence is at risk when I'm feeling really overwhelmed and everything seems like an equal priority and I can't distinguish and I'm just, you know, that's an example because that actually does apply to me. So when you're the one speaking, don't do a whole lot of thinking about this. Just spontaneously say, and it'll probably incorporate some of the prior handouts because we just talked about the kind of thoughts and relapse warning signs that lead. So, you know, that should come into play here. And so it'll take a couple minutes for you to just get it all out while the other person is recording it, writing it out. Then the person who did the recording, give feedback to the person who spoke, because sometimes when we're speaking about this, we kind of go a little unconscious, and we may not even be aware of all of what we've said. Humor me here, there's really a value to that. So you will, if you were the one who was writing, you'll now tell the person what you said is da 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 da. And if you noticed while they were telling you what the when they know their abstinence is at risk, if you saw that in one or another of the items they seem to display a lot of emotion, like it really gripped them, give them that feedback so they know that's something especially important to pay attention to. Okay, so I will, okay, let me just see if there's anything. Yes. Right. One person will be speaking this out, and eventually I'm going to have you give the paper to her so that she'll have that for the future. But for now, just hold on to it. So you'll just decide who's going to go first. We'll take. Excuse me? Not in the beginning. Just hold on. After you give her feedback, just hold on to the paper for then, and I'll let you know when you want to just trade papers. Okay, so one person, I'll just review this again, I know it's a little tricky. One person is just going to speak out loud spontaneously while the other person records the essence of what they say. When they've kind of exhausted what they want to say, then the partner who wrote will read what they wrote back to the person along with giving them any feedback about some emotional charge that they noticed. Okay, so I will call time around 10 minutes, so you'll have 10 minutes for the two of you together to do one round like that. And so when I call time, then you're going to want to switch. And when I tell you to switch, I'll give you the instructions again in case it seemed murky. But if you finish before those 10 minutes, then go ahead and switch roles. And now you'll be the one, if you were writing, you'll be the one to speak and answer this question while the other person writes and then gives you feedback. You'll see a portion at the bottom. We're not going to do that yet. I'll give you that about what you'll do to when you notice the signs happening. That'll be the next step after that. So after 10 minutes, I'll just say, if you haven't already switched partners, you need to do so now. And I realize if you have a group of three, you're probably going to need to figure out how to manage the time. Okay. All right. So I'm going to start the time now. So are we good? What I want you to do now is write the person's name on the top of the sheet that you just wrote down what they said and tear it out of your packet and give it to them and vice versa. That way you'll have for the future what you said that they wrote down. Make sense? Okay, let's take a minute to wrap up because we're going to move on to the next part of this that you're going to do individually. And then I'm going to have some people come up to the front if they'd like to share. Only if they want to. No pressure. But we do have time. Okay, so you've switched. You've each had a chance to do this. You've ripped your page out and written their first name at the top and given it to them, so now they have a record of what they said, right? Because sometimes as we're saying these things, we're not even necessarily aware of it, and it's very helpful later on. Now, the second part of this is, what are you going to do with this information? It's one thing to notice it and recognize. It's another to take action. So this, in and of itself, building a really strong recovery program is something that deserves so much more time than what we have for the remainder of this workshop, but I at least want to get you started with it. So the next step to get started is to spend about 5 minutes on your own, individually we're going to do this, just jotting down some of your thoughts on what I will do when I notice these signs happening. Okay? So just take some time, and then after that we'll do some group sharing. And I hope that on your list of what you'll do when you notice these things happening, I hope included on that is let your sponsor know. Yeah. Because the strange and terrible thing is that while that's so important to do, the disease tells us that that's the last thing we should do. We should keep it all secret, right? And I'm sure you've heard, we're as sick as our secrets. And the disease hates it when we use the tools, but it's still doing push-ups in the corner, so we need to fortify ourselves. Okay, so now having done this and having looked at your own relapse warning signs and having looked at the kind of thought processes that often precede relapse and then taking some time to speak it out and get some feedback, would anyone like to come to the front and share maybe some things you've learned about yourself today and possibly the beginnings of a plan to deal with what you've learned? Okay, Mary.
So happy to be here with all of you. Thank you so much for your support. And we do it together, right? So we program. The first thing that came up for me was not thinking I have a problem. Like, I'm not a compulsive overeater, duh. I can't believe that I would still think that I have this disease of denial, you know, that I don't have a problem. For God's sake, I know I have a problem, but yet I'll tell myself I don't have a problem. And to me, that's denial, big time. So I kind of had to look at that again. And I'm not a sugar addict. Yeah, right. My goodness. I mean, oh my goodness. Ask any of my kids, they'll tell you. And then I can handle it. Duh. You know, I can't handle it. God can handle it. My higher power can handle it. But I cannot handle it. So all those things came up again for me, you know, the aspects of my disease. And the good news is I have a higher power I can rely on in my 12 steps and my program and the Serenity Prayer. There's all these things that I can do when that criticism or when that part of me comes up, the denial and then criticism of myself and all the shame. Which I deal with on a daily basis, but I have all these tools of program, and I have this wonderful big book that I have to run to quite a bit. And that was something I reminded myself of when I shared with my partner how I want to be a normal eater, and things happen, and I lose my abstinence. So things I notice when these signs, things I'll do when I notice this is I'll call someone, I'll run to the big book, breathe, which I need to do right now, I'm anxious. steps, promises, all the jewels that we have in our program. I call them jewels. They're like treasures to me. Pray, ask my higher power for help, write. Say the serenity prayer over and over. Take 5 minutes. I mean, I have a very stressful job as a caregiver, and if I don't take time away and I just stay there and deal with whatever's going on with this lady that I take care of, and she knows now that I will take time out, which is good because I'm kind of training her to what I need to do. And but that helps a lot, just to take myself away from the situation. So, and I sing. Sometimes it just helps to sing, and she'll sing with me. So there's just all these creative things, too, that you can think about that you like to do. Garden, she has huge yards that I've been able to bring sunflowers into and to cheer both of us up and things like that. So anyway, I guess that's about all I have. I was just going to share a situation that I shared with my partner here when we were doing this exercise. When I act like I'm normal and I just you know, kind of numb out away from who I really am, which is a compulsive overeater, sugar addict, in recovery, grateful, I will do these behaviors. Like my granddaughter graduated from high school, had a couple of them graduate this year. So I was completely absent with one celebration. But then the other one, we went to downtown Huntington after, and we had this, I had an absent meal with my family, and they all had their stuff. And then we go to another place for my granddaughter's request of a treat, you know, for, you know, part of the graduation thing, or part of the graduation celebration. Totally gave in, totally just acted like I was one of them, and, oh, yeah, I'll have one of these. I did say no first, and then I just kind of, and that's my pattern, unfortunately. But here I am, abstinent today, so that's a good thing. And
and go ahead and sign the release
yes,
form.
Yes, and I'll sign my own release form. But anyway, thank you for listening. That's all I have. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
We have a burning desire because we have 2 minutes to have another share if somebody has a burning desire to come up and share what you learned. Anyone? Marilyn Rose? Great. Let me just clean this just in case. Just do a...
Thank you, everybody. My name is Marilyn Rose. I'm a grateful compulsive eater in recovery.
Hi, Marilyn.
Woo-hoo, I get so happy for being here. So happy, and what a wonderful thing we're doing. And Mindy, thank you. Thank you, thank you. And one of the things, I had a wonderful partner, and it's like, oh, yeah. But one of the things I had to put in, we numbered them, but even number zero for me, I know my absence at risk when I'm trying to save my family. And I can share with you that I had a one-meal slip 3 years ago and 11 months because I had a call from the family. He's in the hospital, and it's like, dun-da-da-da. And I have to tell you, my experience is I now have an Al-Anon sponsor, and I have worked this program, and it's this is my addict, and this is what I do, and my family is my family. I love them. The other thing is that one of the things that I noticed that trying to have a relationship with my family and friends, I feel shame about being an addict and all the work it takes to be in recovery. And it's like, now is that crazy thinking? I've been saved from addiction. I've been given this life, this incredible life, incredible people, wonderful miracles. But I'm embarrassed because I have to weigh and measure my food. I've got to call people. Oh, no, poor girl. But you know what? How many lost weekends did I have? I weighed 100 pounds more. I had no life. And so there's that addict. It's like, poor you. Got to pack those vegetables. Oh, no. It's like, you know, the other thing I know, if I don't have abstinent food in the house and if I'm not prepared, Mindy said it so well, it's that precious child. I live here in California, And when I'm going out, I always have a meal in my car. You don't know about traffic. You don't know about an earthquake. But I got one meal. I know I'm ready to go. I got my phone and my phone charger and a big book there. And it's like, okay, we'll get through this, you know. So, and so I don't just like wing it because we were talking. I don't do the drive-thrus anymore, you know. So it's like I bring my own. Protect this precious thing called abstinence. And the other thing, for me, it's not having enough fun. I can be real serious with what life's looking like. It's like, oh, gosh, getting older, got these things, we got these bones, we got this what. And it's like, have you colored today? And that's one of the things that I do. I have an app on my phone. If I can't get out my markers and my pastels and all that kind of stuff, I just have to go on my phone. And there's a number in the program, tap color. And there's a lot of apps. You just go color. And bring in a little color, because a lot of my thinking was black and white. And thank you, because now I have a black and white food plan, or I know what I eat and I don't. And so there's more color in my life. So thank you very much.
Wonderful. Great shares. Great work you're doing. Now, just since we only have a little less than 10 minutes left, I want to just walk you through what else is in this packet, because it can really help you to flesh out that recovery program to make it as strong as possible. So let's turn to page 6. So let's say you've gotten pretty far down in the relapse process. You haven't quite picked up the food, but you're now at the stage where the food is on your mind and you feel like tremendous urge, maybe a craving for a specific food, more likely just the craving to use food to get through whatever you're feeling. So first line of defense is always prayer, right? But I've divided these into different categories of strategies. And just think about these as you're going through. Like I said, we're not going to go through them all now, but there are various ways to take contrary action, right? Because your head is screaming, eat, eat, I'll die if I don't eat. You won't die. Cravings actually pass. It's remarkable. And sometimes when we call someone who's in worse shape than we are, you know, they've just been relapsing their brains out, we get off the phone and we're like, I don't know how that happened, but I'm not thinking about eating anymore. So service. But again, think about these. What I'm trying to give you is as many resources and tools, and some will be more applicable and helpful for you than others. Okay, so let's go on to page 7 just to let you know what's here. That's where you can add additional ideas that weren't on the last page to manage your cravings. We also know that significant others can be very supportive or not, but there are many significant others that we have that are in the program, and you want to identify your support network. No one can prevent you from relapsing, and it's no one's job to do that, but they can help you avoid relapse sometimes by pointing out patterns of thinking they hear, behavior. I know my husband used to say, what about those calls that you used to make, you know, in my relapse? It's like, don't bother me. Don't tell me that. I don't want to hear that, you know. But I needed to hear that. So these are, you know, some people that can be supportive, places, you know, meetings, park, beach, you know, whatever is supportive to you that gives you a sense of calm. And things that are supportive, sometimes affirmations, hugs, serenity prayer, reading literature, you'll come up with all kinds of ideas. But the idea is take some time to think about this and add that to your recovery plan. Okay, page 9. The worst has happened. You've gone far enough down the pike that you picked up the food. Is that the end? You need to leave the program, never come back? You're a terrible person? No. The key thing when you have a slip is to prevent the next one, because if we get into a shame spiral, we are actually fueling the next, we're preparing for the next slip. So as hard as it is, we want to look at what happened, tell on ourselves, right? When I have sponsees who have slips, I tell them that in every outreach call, they need to tell someone, I had a slip, because the less it's in their head, the less power the disease has over them. So we are not the disease. We have the disease, okay? It's the core of who we are is our higher power and all the goodness that we are. But we do have this disease that we need to manage that is determined to kill us. I mean, that is its sole goal. So we're here building all the resources and fortifications against that. So you'll take a look and see. But there are some people who the first time they have a slip, they just think, oh, I'm so worthless, I can't do this, I might as well drop out. Maybe no one told them that you don't have to drop out just because you had a slip. So we're imperfect, so what? You know, I mean, you can read in As Bill Sees It, where he talks about the slip business, and it's a very reassuring comment. So you can kind of go in As Bill Sees It. So that's the idea. If your head is saying, well, I've lost everything here, I might as well just keep eating. That's the disease talking. So again, at the bottom, you'll see develop a plan. How are you going to prevent this going forward? So lastly, I've given you a resource here that you may or may not want to use, but I found it kind of fun. It's a little bit different take on a daily inventory, like a 10th step. Rather than one that you've seen before, I took the Just For Today reading and excerpted from parts of it questions that kind of relate to that, and so you can sort of answer. And in a sense, this is basically a 10th step, but there's some additional things on here. And so if you look at page 11, Just For Today, I'll have a program, I'll follow it to the best of my ability, and then you're looking at, well, what steps did you consciously work today? One of the most helpful things a sponsor ever said to me, this is like 20 years ago, was when I talked about a problem that I was having, what steps are you working on related to that problem? It's like an amazing question. It just focuses you, because there's no such thing as a problem that doesn't have a step that's going to help you, right? And also, I should say, as we wrap up, there's no problem so bad that binging can't make it worse. All righty, remember that. You are a beautiful human being, all of you are. These are just tools to prevent you from going down that terrible bunny trail, and I apologize to all the bunnies. But the idea being that if your life is becoming unmanageable, you see these different things happening, recognize it for what it is. You play detective in your own process and tell people, don't let yourself fall into that shame spiral. That's the most destructive thing. I think forgiving yourself, which feels like impossible, is actually the most important task after you've had a slip, okay? So stay close to the program. Don't leave before the miracle happens. I'm living proof that, you know, if I can get abstinent after 9 years of relapsing, anybody can. And it's just, we have the whole program laid out for us, and hopefully there's some additional tools that will help you with that. So thank you so much for coming. I want to give you my phone number for outreach. I'd love to hear from you, and I hope to hear you on PhoneBridge. My phone number in Pacific time is 310-418-6834, 310-418-6834 in Pacific time, and my name is Mindy. All righty. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you all.
You guys did a lot of work today, and it's good. So thank you for the work.